Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Tonight's show is a really sincere discussion on health and mental health and suicide, and we have Katie Williams with us who, at 17, wrote a book called The Journey of the Heart, a very personal story for her as it relates to her brother. So I want to just, we're just going to clear the way now. We're just going to start talking with Katie. Since we're not getting the reverb, I am not in front of the panel. So if you want to ask a question, I'm going to walk back in there in a little bit. You can press the number one. To get in the queue for questions. I'm not sure how that's going to go tonight. I'm not sure how anything is going to go tonight as it relates to the panel. So, but we'll give it a good solid try, and we'll go from there. So, Katie, I had statistics in front of me. I can't go back and read them. So maybe you can help me out.
Yes, I can help fill that in. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm glad we're going to talk about something so important that I think a lot of people are just afraid to touch and don't want to talk about, but it's just been in the news so much lately, whether it's high-profile suicides or not, it's so important that we talk about to learn the warning signs so we can help save a life, so we can help those around us.
Right.
But just to start out with some statistics, it's 45,000 Americans every year. Suicide rates are now the highest they've been in 30 years. People now in this country are dying more of suicide than they are of homicide and of car accidents. And it's become an increasing problem. Yes. And it's become an increasing problem even in the last, as I said, 30 years. It's just been on the rise. And so that's why we're out here talking about this, to really share what we can do about it. And so of the things.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Just some of the things that we'll talk about tonight will just be some of those warning signs, and I'll certainly share my story when I lost my brother as a teen to suicide, and just kind of looking back now, the warning signs and the things that I now see in retrospect, and what we all can do to just be more aware so that we can help save a life of our own loved ones right around us.
And, you know, I think you said something from the get-go that there have been so many recently, and it doesn't matter. It really just doesn't matter whether they're celebrity or not. This is devastating to everyone, and it's something that we all need to pay attention to. And it's a taboo topic, and it shouldn't be. It should be something that we talk about openly, or that we recognize openly. And I think that's the whole goal of what I wanted to do tonight with you. I wanted you to tell your story. I wanted you to kind of let everybody know why you're here and why this is such an important topic for you. And I want you to share what you've been doing for other people, because the work that you're doing now is so very important. But at the same time, you know, because we are the whole scoop and we try to get the information out, I want people to just be aware of their own surroundings. And you told me something just a couple of minutes before we got on air, and about a friend of yours that just by virtue of awareness saved a life. So let's talk about all that, okay?
Sounds great. Yeah. So for starters, I'll share a little bit about my story and how I started, you know, my personal interest in all this, a little bit about my brother and my family, and then I'll share kind of what happened with him and the work I'm doing now. So first, to start out, my brother Gabe was 17 years old when he took his life. I was 16 at the time, and I think that it really just struck a blow through our community, whether it was through our school, the church, you know, sports teams, you name it. It was just something that really rocked our world. And I think unexpected in the sense that Gabe, you look at this kid and you think, great family, good-looking kid, a ton of friends. What would he possibly have going wrong in his life that he'd want to kill himself, as if mental health and depression is circumstantial, as if that having things, quote, right in your life is all that it is. And it's just so much deeper than that, as we now know just the links between depression and mental health and people that, get that help and that can raise that awareness, can get the help to really to lead a full life. But regarding my brother, he, in his teens, he always kind of, he was always a bit of a rebel, kind of did things his own way. You know, he would convince me, hey, let's go take the car out. Let's go sneak the car out and, you know, things like that. Just really, you know, if he was told to do something, he usually went the other direction. He just was very much rebellious in that way regarding, you know, whether it was school or home. And I think for him, he just didn't really realize that it went deeper than that. I don't know what, I can't to this day even explain everything that was going on deep in him. I just knew that he just seemed very bothered, very upset. And my parents started getting him help. He started going to counselors and started getting on medication. And they were starting to, they were getting him help and they were seeing that it was really his issues were just escalating. He went into juvenile hall at one point. It was just, it was escalating. And that was, that became pretty evident. That he needed help. And he used to say things like, well, I'll just kill myself. You know, you won't miss me if I'm gone, or you'd be better off without me here. He would make these comments, and I think, oh, he doesn't mean it. You know, he's just 17 or something just went wrong, and he's upset, so he's just saying that because he's feeling upset. But I never in a million years would have thought he would actually do it because everyone loved Gabe. I thought, he'll never do that. He's got a great life. So I never took him serious, and now I know that's what you take serious. If someone says they're going to kill themselves, believe them.
So, I mean, and that's the number one lesson, right? If they say it, believe them. You can. It's always best to err on the side of caution, correct?
That's right. And the thing is, you know, on a deeper level, why should I decide what he really means? Like, who are we to think we know what they mean? That's a cry for help. And so if you, you know, in learning those really just through the process by going through this, I recognize in hindsight all these warning signs he had. For example, he would say he's going to take his life. He started making phone calls, reaching out to friends the night before he died. He was making, putting his affairs in order, essentially saying his goodbyes. But we didn't recognize it as a goodbye. I just thought, oh, he's calling all his friends. That's, you know, pretty, I mean, he's a pretty social guy. It didn't stand out to me as anything
right.
unusual, except that it was one call after another, back to back. He came to school the next morning. Just
he was 17.
He was 17.
Yeah. So why would you think if a 17-year-old's calling all of his friends, why would you think anything over that? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It didn't stand out to me at all. Also, the night before he died, he started giving me things from his room, just personal possessions. He was giving me stuff. And I thought, that was a little strange. I thought, that's weird. Why are you giving me your stuff? You know? And he said, no, you'll, trust me, you'll, it's better for you. You should take this. And I thought, what is he talking about? That's weird. He's giving me things. And then he also went to school the next morning and drove through the parking lot just to say goodbye to his friends, just to see them one last time. Of course, not using the words goodbye, but getting one last visit in with them. He started increased use of drugs and alcohol in the last, I'd say, 6 months to a year of his life, maybe longer. And in my mind, again, I just thought, oh, he's just experimenting. You know, he's a kid. I didn't think much of it. It wasn't like hard drugs or anything. He was just doing what I thought was just kind of kid stuff. But he also was really getting into self-harm, like carving on himself. And that stood out. That was like, why are you doing, no one in our family is doing that. None of your friends are doing that. Why are you doing that? And so that was kind of one thing. And I think just his aggression got stronger. And actually that's one of the warning signs too, just changes in mood. And if anyone is depressed or anxious or irritable, or they retreat from family and friends and really just isolating, all of those are signs.
Okay. And I think that is absolutely where we should focus. You know, some of the signs that we just tend to overlook, because everything you just mentioned, with the exception of hurting himself. You know, hurting himself would be alarming to the point where why is he doing that? What does he need? But it doesn't necessarily trigger, oh my God, he's going to kill himself, for most of us. So, you know, the awareness factor here, it's just not talked about. So I think we need to keep going, and you know, if you wouldn't mind sharing some more so that, you know, we can kind of emphasize those points as we go, because it's not in our general constitution as human beings to say, oh, well, if you do this, then you must be, you know, thinking about killing yourself. It's just not something that most of us think about like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not something that you'd necessarily draw the conclusion that, oh, this person might be thinking about suicide. And you're right, it's not. It's when they're all add up together that you start seeing the picture. And I think one of the main things, you know, there's talk, there's behavior, and there's mood. And if you, according to American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, really as we learn more about this and just on the whole as a society, as we get more aware of how these things fit together, you can pretty much classify them across those three categories between talk, behavior, and mood. And when you put those three together and they have some traits in each of those areas, that's when your alarm bells should be going off, the red flags, and we'll talk about how you can help someone. But again, just to review those signs, for example, if a person just talks about feeling hopeless and wanting to kill themselves, feeling like a burden, you know, for a long time, statistically, the demographic that took their life most often is actually white males, middle-aged white males. Mm. So it's an older demographic than most people think of teens and 20s, but actually, statistically, historically, it's been older males, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily just what you picture, right? And so it's feeling like a burden. You know, if someone maybe gets later in their life and they're not financially where they thought they would be, or with their relationships, they're not where they thought they would be. And if they start talking about, I'm just a burden, or if they say they feel trapped, or they're just in unbearable pain, or what's the point, all those kinds of things are all warning signs. And just to put it in perspective, you know, my brother would say, you know, these things like, oh, you know, I'll just kill myself. And he would, you know, be carving on his wrist and all this kind of stuff. And I would see the scars on him. And I just, at one point when he was, you know, getting help and everything, I said, you know, as a little sister does, I pushed him on it a little bit. Like, what's going on? Are you just making up excuses because you don't want to go to school? And, you know, I was insensitive in that way. And, you know, in a way, you know, in that moment, his response, he just got angry and he just said, you don't understand. And actually it was his response that stands out to me so much, because that was one of the first times that I recognized, you know, something, there might be more here than I realized, because that's my big brother. That's my friend. You know, he tells me things, what goes on in his life. And if I don't recognize it, if I don't see that he's in deeper pain, you know, if I'm pushing him on it and he comes back and says, just his response, I thought, maybe there's more here that I'm not seeing.
Right. Well, so then he actually took his life. And I think I also want to talk about the impact that has on the remaining family members and friends, because it's devastating for forever. And then we have a whole mental health component to that. So I'm sure that you've in your journey since having written the first book here, I'm sure you've come across those issues as well, and I'm sure you've felt those issues personally. So then do we also have a component there where there's a residual? And I don't know this to be fact. I'm asking the question of what you might have found. I mean, is there a residual impact of other people maybe feeling in the same kind of desperate scenario after having experienced someone else who has taken their life? I mean, does that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important how the media coverage, for example, The way media covers a suicide can affect what we call suicide contagion. So it's really important to talk in the right way. If anyone is feeling vulnerable, if anyone is feeling like they're thinking about suicide, or you know someone that you think is exhibiting these signs, because there is such a thing as suicide contagion when it's reported over and over and sensationalized, someone who's feeling vulnerable, you want to direct them to hope and to resources and not stating again and again how and where someone did the act of taking their life. So in that, I'll just say that, and this won't be the first, it won't be the last time I'll say it in our time together and in this interview, but that number, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, is 800-273-8255. And what you bring up, Carol, is so important. Just that suicide contagion is very much a real thing. So is family history, for example. I think that's kind of what you're touching on earlier as well, is that when someone has been impacted by suicide, they are more at risk. So if there's a family history of depression and suicide, that family does have a higher risk. And so higher risk, it doesn't mean it's definite, of course not, but it does mean that you want to be more aware of mental health, of getting whatever help is needed, whether it's counseling, whether it's medicine and meeting with doctors, whatever it is, getting those tools so that when people go to that dark place, they have the tools to cope, reaching out to loved ones, someone that you know is your personal lifeline as well as, you know, the national lifeline, someone that you know you can trust and reach out to. Childhood abuse and trauma, all of that makes someone also at a higher risk for suicide. So all of that is incredibly important to just be aware of the picture, because that's really all you can do, right? You have to just be aware of what's out there so that you can know how to take next steps.
So what you just said to me, though, Katie, is you just mentioned things, you know, like childhood trauma or those are things that also don't get talked about a lot. And then someone carries them through life, or maybe I'm glad that you gave me the actual name for the suicide contagion. But if there are celebrities who commit suicide, which we know there have been a few lately, and in the last few years there have been quite a few, you know, the impact of, well, see, even that person decided to take his own life. See, so why is life worth living? So how then, you've worked with a number of groups, you've worked with a number of experts, and you are now an expert in this area as well. I know you just said, if somebody's experienced this or that or whatever, those are things that aren't talked about. What about the things that people might see but don't hear, or maybe hear that don't necessarily pertain to those topics that you just mentioned? Like, what triggers you to say, oh, there might be one that I might need to look at, not necessarily by virtue of knowing family history or knowing childhood trauma or knowing anything else that you just mentioned, but just maybe, you know, someone that is in a group with you meeting, and, you know, what kinds of triggers are there so that we can be aware of some of the things that, because these things don't get talked about. And people won't share, oh, by the way, I want you to think about, hey, you know, this happened to me, so just know that. Nobody's going to say that out front, at least not that I've experienced that. Do you understand where I'm going here? Like, I'm trying to understand if I'm in a room full of people, or maybe I'm just with a bunch of friends that with whom I know but don't know well, you know, what are some of the little nuances that someone might, you know, kind of come out with that might trigger for me, hey, this person might need a little help, or this person might need a little attention? How does that work?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's important to look at all of it. I think that, you know, statistically they say 4 out of 5 people who will attempt to take their life will tell someone before they do. And it's just a cry for help. So the odds are the person that they're going to tell is going to be someone in their tight circle of friends or family members. And it might be subtle. It might be comments such as like what we had talked about, you know, if they're feeling hopeless or feeling like a burden. But if it's someone that, like you said, you're in a group of people, you know, in a room, it's more subtle. It's more about their overall behavior, isolating from family and friends, sleeping too much or too little, withdrawing from activities they used to enjoy. And, you know, some of these you'll know depending on your connection and how well you know that individual, certainly, but just any kind of change in behavior, increased use of drug or alcohol, loss of interest in activities that they used to enjoy, just heightened depression, irritability, even anger. And then one sign that most people are less aware of is if a person has decided, one thing to look out for, if they've decided to take their life, there's often a mood lift. There's often a sudden improvement or relief. And unfortunately, this is often a false signal to the family that what they're doing is working. So if there's a sudden turn that seems very sharp in terms of an improvement, and all of a sudden the person seems like they're doing so well, typically what that means is that person feels relieved because they've decided to take their life. So that's when you have to start talking to them and ask them those hard questions, like, have you thought about taking your life? Have you attempted before? These are questions, frankly, people are afraid to ask because they're afraid that the answer will be yes.
So I have to do a little business here because I got a text that said that we dropped off from sound a little bit. So if anybody missed any part of that, I just kind of want to recap. I asked the question, what are some of the nuances if you're sitting with a group of people, a group of friends, family, whatever? The big things people don't talk about, like, you know, hey, this happened to me when I was a kid, or this happened to me, you know, I just need to know, I lost everything, or whatever. People don't generally bring that up in conversation, so I asked Katie, what are some of the nuances that you might see? And she was just explaining that most people are going to talk to their closest circle of friends and say things like, well, it just doesn't matter, and Katie, you can help me out here. And so we kind of ended that whole little segment on being aware. So if you kind of just want to recap those maybe first five little things that people may have missed in hearing. I think we're back live now and people can hear us. So maybe just kind of say, hey, you know, look for these things if you wouldn't mind. I'm sorry. I don't know why we're having so many technical difficulties tonight, but I'm just trying to get the information out.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we're gonna press on. That won't stop us. So some of those things to look out for is just anyone who's sharing that they feel like a burden, or they feel that life is hopeless, or they feel they don't have meaning, and they just talk about that wanting to kill themselves. And some things to look out for, just isolating from family and friends, sleeping too much or too little, increased use of drugs or alcohol. And if you know anything about the person, you know, did they stop doing activities they used to enjoy? Are they, you know, have they had multiple stressful life events just occur? You know, anything that they would feel, you know, rejection or a divorce, a death, a financial crisis, any exposure to someone close to them that took their life, you know, anyone near them who died by suicide, even a family history of suicide or depression or childhood trauma, all of those things stack up to be really just things to be aware of. You know, if this person seems like their mood, their behavior, what they're talking about is changing, even if they're searching for ways. It sounds so obvious. It's almost like, how is that a warning sign? Because it's just so obvious, but it is. If they talk about wanting to kill themselves, if they are preoccupied with the idea of death, if there's just a lot of substance abuse problems, mental health, depression, many different kinds of ailments, all of those are just things to be aware of. If those are all, especially if they have multiple of those in their, if they exhibit multiple kind of traits, then those are all things to just be aware of. That's someone you want to start talking to, you know, checking in on them, making sure they're okay, asking if they've, you know,
again,
sharing genuine concern.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I'm a little blown away. I just have to put it out, put it right out there, because everything that you're talking about, I can't say that I don't know. There's not one person that I know that hasn't experienced one, if not two or three of those, if I know them well. And then I wonder, am I paying attention, or, you know, are they hurting more than I even gave them credit for being? And I'm just like everybody else, because, you know, people say, well, you know, I might as well just stop now. And I don't think to take it to that next step to say, hey, you know, are you okay? I just make a joke out of it. And it's not something, you know, that should be joked about. I mean, it wasn't, and it's not intentional. It's just a conversation that now has shifted in my mind as to how I will handle it in the future. But, you know, you're just kind of blowing me away a little bit. So if I'm being blown away, I'm sure that people who are listening, if they're hearing this for the first time, might be too. So if you want to share that experience and call in and, you know, ask a question. I didn't get a chance to tell anybody. If you want to call in and ask a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions, and that's 347-855-8894. Or you can blog us on the Blog Talk Radio Whole Scoop page on Facebook. Katie, so I just kind of wanted to bring you back around to that. I know that this is something that you've been so intimately involved with for a long time now. So for you, you know, these are things that you get out to people all the time. And for me, I'm hearing this, you know, I did a little research before the show, but I'm hearing it for the first time as you're talking, and I'm just wondering if you know, it's just pretty amazing, because a lot of this just seems like it's nonchalant kind of conversations that people make with each other on a daily basis, and then it's like, oh my, the reality sets in. Do you find that a lot, or is it just me?
You know, I think it's interesting how you said earlier that a lot of the people you're close with, many of them have been through those things listed, kind of those life factors, if you will, or historically that they've been through some of those events in their life. I think the difference is it's how the person goes through it. In fact, I remember talking to someone recently. It's always easier to share a story, right? It illustrates it so much better. I remember someone sharing their story with me about their loved one who took his life, and they said that oftentimes they wouldn't, with this individual, they wouldn't always share kind of, they wouldn't bring up the news or things that they know would bring the person down, because they knew he was sensitive. And for some reason, that word sensitive, you know, and like gentle heart, you know, like those, the way they described their loved one made me think, wait, I totally understand what they mean, because I think that my brother, as tough as he was on the exterior, I think he was sensitive. I think deep down things bothered him more than he let on. And I think that's the difference, is like you might go through many things in your life, but it's the way that you handle it that makes one person different from the next. You know, what makes someone that has had, say, a stressful life event, but they go through it, but it doesn't affect them in the same way as someone else who just might need a little more help. They might need to just talk it out. They might need to go see a doctor or a therapist or get some help, whether that's, you know, medication or whatever their doctor, their physician agrees is the right thing for them. What it really makes me think of is that we're all just trying to, you know, we're all just trying to do the best we can with the life that we have in this time with the resources we have. And I think that the external factors, it affects everyone so differently. And so one person won't be affected as deeply or feel as scarred by something as another. And I'm not minimizing what people go through. I mean, my goodness, there's so many of my friends who I think that have gone through so many different life events, and who they are now, like what the, you know, the incredible people they are because of it. But I think something just clicked in my brother where it bothered him so much that he felt like a burden. He felt like his life wasn't good enough. He felt like he got into so much trouble with our family, with school. He felt like he'll never be able to bounce back, that he dug such a deep, deep hole, and that he wouldn't be able to come back from it.
Where do we fit in? I'm sorry, you go ahead and finish that.
I was just going to say, but there were a number of his friends that, you know, weren't doing great in school and weren't necessarily, you know, following all the rules, but they weren't bothered by it like he was about his, whether you want to call it performance or what, he just, you know, whether it was school or whatever, it bothered him so much. And I think about Gabe in that way, that he took it in a different way than someone else would. He was harder on himself, I think.
And you're right. Everybody's different. Everybody reacts differently. I mean, that's true about everything. You know, you can put two people in a room and give them the same experience, and they experience it differently. And they handle it differently. So it's absolutely true. That's a well-known fact. Except that what are you finding through your ventures with this? What are you finding as it relates to the norms of society and how those so-called norms or those so-called rules of society, if you will, impact somebody that is, and we'll just, for lack of a better word at this point, we'll just say those that are sensitive, that may fall into this category or may be close to this category. What is the impact of that? I mean, the peer pressure for someone in their teens versus the stigma that might be attached to someone older who hasn't accomplished what they thought they would. You know, just what kind of pressure does society play a part in this? What have you found with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so circumstantial, even culture to culture within, you know, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and even culture within culture in any city, in any country, I think it varies so drastically. But what I think is happening, and there's statistics showing that, you know, even young people in Northern California and the Silicon Valley area have a higher suicide rate, unfortunately, because there's so much pressure on them to perform, that all around them are just high performers. So who am I if I'm not building the next great tech company? Who am I if I don't have this huge funding and I'm not a founder of some huge company, you know, to kind of exaggerate the point? But that's the idea, is that as those pressures increase, I mean, we're even seeing that in health conditions where kids are getting even just physical ailments from the pressure of school and performance, even at a younger age. And I'm not going to say it's directly linked to, you know, certain suicide rates, except for in that case I mentioned earlier where that's been found, geographically, the pressure because of where these communities are. But it varies so much, you know, and even for a long time it was, you know, as I said, historically white males, and it just varies depending on societal, you know, influence, cultural influence, and then behavioral influence, just that individual and their own mental health. So I think really the key here is to be open and honest about having that honest conversation if you do have a friend that you're concerned about. And what I have noticed shifting, which for the better, is that it's not mainstream. There is still mainstream as far as like easy to talk about. There is still a stigma for sure with suicide. But what I do notice is that people are more aware of, for example, talking about seeing a doctor, seeing a therapist, mental health. May is National Mental Health Month. We're not in May, of course, but it is just becoming more of a, not only acceptable, but encouraged. Hey, if you need help, talk to a therapist. You need help, talk to a doctor. Find out what are those ways you can help yourself. What are the tools? So that's one thing. And another is I've found just in talking to people as I share my story, how they share theirs with me and say, thank you so much for talking about something so serious like mental health and depression, and how oftentimes people who die by suicide are depressed. Not that everyone who's depressed will take their life, of course not, but there is that strong link between people who have died by suicide and depression. And I would say with that, people have said, you know, I was in that dark place and I made it through because I found tools and I found ways to cope. And I think that's what encourages me and helps me keep going when I think about, you know, I wish that my brother got whatever it was, more of it or earlier in his life, whatever it would have, whatever that would have been. But I just think that there's so many more resources now and that people have learned how they can live a full life and make it through that dark place.
I think what you just said is just amazing because you're so it's so true. The thing that hit home with me though, you're right. Culturally, you know, there are still cultures that if suicide is someone, you know, if a family is involved in suicide, they're shamed for life, and they don't ever speak of it again. You know, I was raised Catholic, and when I was growing up, if someone committed suicide, you weren't allowed to be buried in the Catholic cemetery. And so then the family was shamed because they had a family member that couldn't be buried where they wanted them to be. I think those things have changed, but you're right. It depends on the circumstance, but sharing... you know, I listened to your interview the interview you did with Oprah, and you know, one of the things that came through was sharing stories save a life, and you know, that's so simple and it's so basic, but it does, it saves a life. People need to know that other people experience similar things and they can make it through, and they just need maybe a little bit of tools or something else to help them. So that brings me to the next point, because we never have enough time on this program. So I wanted to kind of say, tell us what you're working on now, who you're working with, the kinds of things, give us a couple of stories, tell us how you've saved some lives, and kind of put this all into perspective for us a little bit, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of a big picture. First of all, I love what you said about, you know, you share a story, you save a life. It's so true. I'll start by sharing that story and then kind of go into what I'm doing now, what I'm working on, and how it all ties together. So first, that story, I had a friend of mine that we had basically, we'd known each other for several years. He knew about my brother. He knew about the warning signs. We actually had a speech class together in college, so I was practicing on him. So he was very well acquainted with all the warning signs in detail because I was practicing my speech on him so I could go to high schools and share warning signs and speak to groups. So I, in detail, gave him, you know, my whole speech and warning signs. And a few weeks later, this friend of mine from this college class said, "Hey, I'm a little concerned about my friend." Out of the blue, he just texted me and said, "Hey, man, thanks for being such a great friend." And he said, I looked at my phone and I said, "What's his deal? We have plans to hang out really soon. I can't believe he's reaching out and saying thanks for being a good friend. What is that about?" And we talked and I got a little more information. I said, "I absolutely think you're right to trust your instinct. I think you need to intervene. You need to get his family involved and also medical professionals." And because he intervened, he saved this kid's life.
Wow.
He saved his friend's life because he recognized one warning sign that this friend of his was essentially saying goodbye. He was reaching out one last time. And I will say this, in my experience and what I've learned over the years of working with different people and different stories, when someone starts making those phone calls, it's within hours. It's the day before or it's hours before. That is what you have to pay attention to. If someone is starting to make final phone calls, text messages, they're reaching out of the blue, saying hello, all these kind of, not saying hello, but just reaching out, and it feels, something doesn't quite feel right about it, it kind of feels out of place, as my friend recognized, that's a goodbye. It's a final outreach, and he saved his life because he recognized it.
Are they
and
reaching
the parents,
out? Do you find that they're reaching out and saying bye because they actually don't want to say goodbye and they want somebody to recognize that but can't say it? Or it's more final and like, "Hey, man, I'm done. This is it. Thanks for being such a great friend."
Depends on the person, but most often the latter. It's, "I've already committed to doing this, and I want to say one final goodbye." without letting them know I'm saying goodbye so that they won't stop me.
So what are you working, who are you working with now? What are you doing? And what kinds of things are out there for people that if they want to reach out? Let's just say, you know, it's somebody that doesn't really want to talk to anybody that they know, that's embarrassed to talk to people that they know or thinks that the people that they know won't help them or can't help them or they're not the people they want to talk with. What do they do? What's available? Where do they start?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, as far as, you know, just all the resources out there of getting someone help. So, for example, that National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and if you know the song by Logic, he made it really famous and performed it at the Grammys. He helped make this phone number extremely well known. That number is 800-273-8255. Or even if you just don't want to talk, if you even just want to text, there's a crisis text line, and you can just text the word TALK. TALK, and you text it to 741-741. So again, if you want to text, it's text the word TALK to 741-741. And if you are thinking about suicide, or as you're hearing this and someone's coming to mind and you're thinking you're concerned about somebody, you can call not only if you're feeling and thinking about suicide, but if you want to call to help a friend, you can reach out to them. They're trained. They're there 24/7. It's national. And that number, again, is 800-273-8255. And they can help coach you. They can walk you through. They're national. And they will point you to local resources. So you let them know what area you're talking about. They're going to help you find local resources.
Wow. So tell us who you're working with now. Tell us what...
And so what I'm doing now is, you know, a bit of my story and sharing my story is when I was 17, I started journaling. And I took that journal and I started, really, I just kept it under my bed. I would just go to it anytime I needed to kind of get everything out, went to my journal. And after about 3.5 years of doing that, I ended up sharing it with a friend and just telling them what I was doing. And my friend said, I think you should publish it. You could help people. And I thought, I don't want to publish my journal. I don't want to share all that personal information and, you know, what I went through and everything. And so this journal is essentially a collection of only what was happening during that time. So I did publish that book, and it's called Journey of the Heart by Katie Williams, and it's on Amazon. It's on Audible, Kindle. My site is journeyoftheheartbook.com if you want more information. And what I've done is really just work with not only National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, but a portion of my book sales go toward helping the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They go directly there because I know that is, you know, the main phone number that people call, and I love the work they're doing. I want to continue to just boost them and be a part of what they're doing in that way. And I also work with various different local organizations here in Los Angeles, working with, I worked with groups of people that had lost a loved one to suicide. I've done that for several years, and I do different kind of community events and 5Ks and speaking to various groups. And all of that is posted and available at journeytheheartbook.com, just more info there. But really it's just about getting the word out because, as we've said before, if you just know a little bit of information, you can help save a life.
Yeah. Wow, Katie, you've done some fabulous things. You're an amazing. You're just amazing. I mean, there's not a whole lot left to say about that. The things that you're doing. Thank you so much for doing all the things that you continue to do and getting the word out and helping people. And you've probably saved countless lives, and maybe you realize some of them, but probably not as many as probably more than you realize. And you know, the world needs more people like you. With all of that being said, we have a few minutes. If somebody wants to call in and ask Katie a question, just press the number 1 if you're listening on the telephone, or give us a call in at 347-855-8894. And if you don't, Katie, what I'd like to do is kind of maybe do a little wrap up here with just an overview of some of the, we'll just recap since we had so many technical difficulties. And again, I apologize profusely for that. I have no idea what that was about. Maybe we can do a little recap on, you know, things to look out for, things that people say, things that you can do. And I think maybe a little more emphasis, because it's not an easy thing to approach somebody and say, hey, I think you're in trouble, you know? So how does somebody overcome that? Because, you know, that's a difficult thing to do as well. So maybe we can just kind of roll that in together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for your kind words and for letting me just be here and share my story and share all this information. I just feel so passionate about it. I'm just thankful anytime I get to share. So first of all, thank you. And thank you for all the work that you're doing. So just kind of a quick overview with everything with suicide. I'll talk about suicide warning signs and then the resources again and just how to help someone, how to talk to someone. So the warning signs, if someone is talking about wanting to take their life, if they say they want to kill themselves, if they talk about being a burden, if they talk about feeling hopeless, like there's no point, if they talk about just wanting to kill themselves or just not wanting to be here anymore or that it's not worth it, that's a warning sign and a cry for help. If that's talk, and then there's behavior. There's how are they acting? Is there increased use of drug and alcohol? Are they numbing themselves? You know, are they searching for ways to, you know, pull away? Are they withdrawing from activities they used to enjoy? And are they, for example, you know, isolating from family and friends, people they normally spend time with, and they're just retreating. They're not coming to gatherings anymore. They're not wanting to hang out. They're not wanting to do things anymore. If they give away prized possessions, as I'd shared earlier, my brother giving me things from his bedroom the night before he died, making final phone calls, text messages, that's huge. That's one I always want to underline and highlight. If you hear nothing else, if you suspect someone is thinking about suicide and they reach out to you and it sounds and feels out of the blue like it could be a final phone call or a goodbye, that is a warning sign. That's something that you take seriously and get them help. And then just overall mental health, depression, anxiety, if somebody just seems like they, if you're just observing in them that there's more anger, there's more irritability, if there's a loss of interest overall, just in their life. Those are all warning signs. And what you can do for somebody like that, and it is hard to really face that head on, you can call the hotline and get advice and kind of see how they would coach you through. But really, it's having an honest conversation. You know, talk to them. Make it safe for them, right? Make it just let them know how much you care, that you're concerned, and that's why you're talking to them. And the thing that's hard to do is you just have to ask them directly, have you thought about suicide? Have you attempted before? You know, do you have a plan?
That is very true. I mean, just think about the average person sitting in a room with somebody that might hear the warning signs. It takes a lot of... I don't want to sensationalize this, but it does take courage to do that. And I think we need to emphasize that, because a lot of us say, oh, it's none of my business. I don't want to overstep my bounds. It's probably crazy. I'm probably nuts. And then we don't say anything. And then something happens and we go, I should have said something. So mm-hmm. You kind of have to swallow that pride a little bit, be a little courageous and say, hey, is this what you're thinking? And what's the worst they can tell you? No, that's not what I'm thinking, you know? But the best they can tell you is yes, and now you talk to this person and maybe talk them away from where they are, right?
Right. You just have to have that open dialogue and let them know, hey, this is a safe place. You can talk to me. You know, let me know what's going on. And this wouldn't be with a stranger, of course. You know, hopefully this
right.
would be someone that you care deeply for, that you're someone that you know, someone you know well that you think would open up to you, or even if you don't think they open up to you, it's worth a shot. Because let's just be honest, I wouldn't say this to just anyone, but if this is your good friend, you also want to know that you did everything you can, everything in your
right.
power. You don't want to have any regrets either. So I want to be honest about that. But also just to say, you know, if someone is really hurting, you'd be surprised what they'll open up and tell you. If they're feeling like, what's the point? you'd be surprised how open they are to talking and sharing, because that's a secret and a burden they're carrying around. And you might be surprised how open they'll be with you about that. And to just really encourage them to find, you know, find what they need, whether that's treatment with a doctor, a therapist, you know, reaching out. It's not a debate. It's not about trying to, like, arm wrestle and convince them that life is worth living, or that, you know, you're going to advice give to them. That's not what this is about. It's not about debating the value of life or, you know, someone that is really needing help. If they are clinically depressed, you're not going to talk them out of it, right? We know that, but sometimes we want so bad to help someone that we want to convince them that everything's okay and convince them of all the circumstances in their life that are going well, but it's not circumstantial. You know, it's really just about being a listening ear for that person and letting them know, hey, I'm concerned. And again, I tell many people, because now that, you know, I've been more publicly sharing and, you know, publishing the book and everything, I get approached by a lot of people with a lot of different backgrounds, and I tell them the same thing. If you have someone in your life that you're concerned about, you can call the hotline to ask them for advice too. Give them your specific scenario and what's going on, and let them coach you through it. They're trained professionals. They're there 24/7. This is what they do. They handle this, and it's worth a call. It's one call. And you can just get a little more coaching and help about how can I help this person, because I've seen it save lives. I've seen it happen.
Again, I'm just kind of, I'm still blown away this entire topic, this entire evening. It's such an important issue to talk about, and it's so... it impacts every single one of us, and I'm really hoping that we can heighten the awareness here, so that, you know, honestly, more lives can be saved. Because I know, just with myself, as I said earlier, this is going to be something that is going to change the way that I interact when I hear certain things with people. I'm going to be I'm going to be a little heightened on what I'm taking in and how I'm processing. So there's so many more things to talk about with this, that it's just, it's like we could talk forever on what people should do and, or what we can do. And I see components to this on where people are with certain points in their lives versus other, you know, the compounded nature of what life brings, and then how certain, I'm sure there are certain personality types that handle this thing differently than others. And so, you know, there's just so many avenues and facets to this that it's a very complicated issue. Again, you know, just getting out there and getting the word out and being the person that you are. I'm so very grateful that you gave us time tonight to talk about this and to hear you and to really kind of just dive into just becoming more aware. It's just amazing.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much for just helping to, you know, continue to spread that word. And, you know, my goal, my personal goal would be, I mean, if everyone knew the warning signs, right? That's my big goal. If everyone was aware of these warning signs, how much more could we help one another to make it through that dark place, to get people help? Because statistically, you'll even see that the people who've attempted suicide and lived, they'll tell you that the instant after it happened, they had instant regret. You know, that's what you'll hear very often when you hear people's stories. I survived an attempt, and I'm so glad I'm still here. And I think about those people that, let's get to them sooner. Let's reach out. Let's keep our eyes open. And if you are thinking about suicide, please call the hotline. Please reach out. If you have a friend that you're concerned about that might be thinking about suicide, sometimes it's hard for them to extend and to ask for help. Keep reaching out to them. If you have a gut feeling right now, someone's coming to your mind right now, reach out to that person. Check in on them. And if they do say they're considering suicide, take them seriously and call that hotline and find out the ways you can get help for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the biggest piece of advice. You started the show with this, and we're ending the show with that. If someone's talking about it, or someone you know is making statements, take them seriously. We don't do that real well collectively. So I think that's the biggest thing I think that we can take away. Take someone seriously for what they say.
That's right. Yes.
Katie, do you want to give out those numbers again?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. So National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. Or if you prefer to text the word TALK to 741-741, and a trained crisis counselor will be responding to you.
Okay. And do you want to give out your information again, your website, your book, everything, so people can, if they missed it the first time, they can get it again?
Thank you. Yeah. So journeyoftheheartbook.com, or you can find my book on Amazon, Journey of the Heart by Katie Williams, and everything else. You can find links to my book, links to interviews and different materials, warning signs, everything is there. journeyoftheheartbook.com.
Okay, perfect. Katie, I can't thank you enough. I really can't. I'll apologize for the technical difficulties, but I think we really did push through and we got some really good information out there. And I'm overwhelmed and I'm very grateful. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're gonna have to have you back, and we're gonna have to kind of maybe do a little adjunct to what we initially talked about. Maybe kind of go a little further, if that's okay with you.
That's great with me. I'd love to.
Okay. All right. Great. On that note, we are out of time, and I'm gonna let everybody know that we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and Tracy Stoppler will be with us. She, if you remember, wrote a book called The Ropes That Bind. Since then, she's written a sequel to it. She's going to talk about that. She has picked up a couple of awards since then. She launched this book with The Whole Scoop a couple of years ago. So, and we haven't spoken to her since. So I'm anxious to see what she has to say and see what she's doing these days. We'll be back with Katie Williams again. I don't know exactly when, but we'll figure it out. And for everybody, you have a great night, and thank you for listening. And remember to blog us on the Facebook Blog Talk Radio page, and tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear. Let us know. And if you need those numbers again, we'll put them out, and we'll keep this going if we need to. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night. And I'm going to try the music again, and hopefully we won't get any more crap. So, anyway, good night. Katie, thank you.
Thank you.